Tell me about you.
Sure. So I recently started Outbound Works with co-founders Travis Wallace and Ben Sardello. Mm-hmm. And what I was doing for 17 years before that was as a mentor and a coach, leadership advisor to CEOs in Silicon Valley. And I've helped 8 now startups reach $1 billion by leading their management teams and coaching their CEOs.
Okay. Did you say 1 billion? Just so people who hear this.
Yeah, 1 billion.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
Yeah, I worked with the management team at LinkedIn and, I was coaching Reed and the boys from the time they were about 200 or 300 employees up through their IPO and up until the point that Jeff came on board and took it the rest of the way to glory. I can't mention all of the names and all the company names because of NDA, but I can say Reba is another one that I worked with the management team there. So, I got to see the unicorn movie of what happens when you scale an enterprise at that pace, right? And what are the different, it almost like feels to me like the acts of a play. What are the different acts of the play and what is needed from the leadership in each act? Because it's very, very distinct. And the needs of a 50-person company are very different than the needs of a 500-person company, which are very different than the needs of a 5,000-person company. So it's fun to observe what are the things that stay in common. What are the things that are true no matter what you're doing? And then what are the things that are truly unique to that specific scenario? And so I've been a student of that for the last 17 years and have really in the back of my mind the entire time been looking for the right team and the right opportunity, the right moment in time. I feel like, I watched because I started coaching in Silicon Valley in 2000 during the dot-bomb when everything was blowing up, right? Exactly.
Yep, I lived in San Francisco at the time, so yes, I remember that.
I remember my daily commute from San Francisco down to Silicon Valley got 5 minutes shorter every week because of the layoffs.
Right.
I kept being early to all my meetings. a lot less time to go, I guess.
Lose them. Oh, that's scary.
Yeah, those were those times. I saw search come and go. I saw social come and go, meaning these huge revolutionary shifts in business consciousness. Mm-hmm. And the next one I saw coming, I said, I'm going to get on this one. I'm not going to see it come and go. And that for me is the marriage between, I'll say AI as an augmented intelligence, if not artificial, but an augmented intelligence. In combination with the topic you know so well of account-based revenue, account-based sales, account-based everything, as Jim Miller likes to say. So I see these two coming together and just being a radical shift in how the enterprise discovers its new opportunities.
Right.
And so we built Outbound Works to push the envelope on that shift and to help companies do it.
So the name of the company is Outbound Works, WORKS. Is that correct?
That's right. Yep. Okay. Outbound Works.
And what is your relationship with them now? Are you the CEO? What are you doing with them?
I am.
You are the main guy. Okay.
I am the CEO of Outbound Works. I have two co-founders. We were really lucky to get to attract Ben Sardella, who was also a co-founder of Datanize. And he recently left Datanize. And then we started talking. I'd actually worked with him at Datanize as a mentor. And we started talking about what we saw coming next and what we wanted to do. And it was the exact same thing. So we said, hey, let's do it together. And then since then, we also have attracted Curtis Ropp, who was a founder of Peak Consulting and has done some really great sales consulting in the enterprise space. And I think we're up to 10 employees now. So growing quite rapidly.
So tell me now, how we hear the term AI, and being an engineer, I love all this stuff because, you know, it's just very interesting to me to see how machines, as they learn and get smarter and smarter. I mean, we're seeing it right now in our top of funnel in the follow-up sequences and leveraging automation for that. But yeah. But tell me your unique slant or what got you so excited about this marriage of artificial intelligence, or as you're calling, augmented intelligence, with account-based selling, or what we used to call in the old-fashioned days, strategic selling, large account selling, whatever. What specifically is it that is just getting you to jump out of bed every morning?
Yeah, I think what had me attracted to it and what has me excited now are slightly different. I think what had me attracted to it is the realization that the most of the responsibilities of that first initial, you know, the SDR or the BDR, that rep who's prospecting, that most of what someone who's doing that today, most of that will be completely automated within 5 years. And so we want to be the company that perfects doing it well, and then, over time replaces that role with automation, which should be exciting to people in that role because it frees them up to do much higher value strategic selling with much higher value accounts.
It should be very exciting for the person, the sales rep. 48% of my audience who are listening to this podcast do all roles. They still are prospecting, they're selling, and a lot of them are still servicing. So they're going to say yay to this.
And that's what kind of woke me up and got me attracted to, you know, I want to get into this foot race and get, you know, be one of the companies that's making this happen. Mm-hmm. And then the closer I got to it, the more I realized that it's shocking, but even today, you know, most of what would make companies successful is simply the bread and butter. It's simply doing the fundamentals. You know, if I was a basketball coach, it'd be, let's practice dribbling, let's practice rebounds. You know, let's make sure that we actually follow up with people, that when we're addressing them personally, that we have a three-tier personalization in every message. So every message has a unique aspect to it, which relates to the industry, a unique message, which is for that company only, and a unique message, which is for that person only. So every message has those three. And so as we begin to learn how to automate that personalization through, applying it to all the vast opportunities of, you know, the data providers that can provide an immense now amount of data about companies. So you cross-reference that data, with a little bit of automation. You get a really personalized message that people respond to. You respond to that message in a timely way, and you start to get results. It's amazing how just, you know, waking up and brushing your teeth gives you an advantage, even today. So I think a lot of the good that we can do in the short term, in the first year, is just automating good habits, which an AI scientist would tell you is not AI, although an AI scientist 100 years ago would tell you that it is. You know, when the calculator came out, calculator was AI, and now it's not. It's just computational. So I think one thing that's fascinating about AI is the closer you get to it, it's a receding horizon, you know, because when you really understand how some things work, very few things that are labeled AI when you get under the hood really have any kind of intelligent machine learning. And I think there is a place for machine learning in the future. You know, there are definitely some good things happening in predictive, where you can take a list of accounts that you've been successful, particularly that you have a large amount of data, like, you know, you're an enterprise company, you can look at those accounts and you can do machine learning on that so that you pick identifiers out that you as a human might not have seen, but which are statistically relevant, and then apply those identifiers to a large account list and start to get an idea of who you should be talking to. I think that there's, you know, 5%, 10%, 15% incremental gain by applying techniques like that. Mm-hmm. But most people are not in the place where they can take advantage of that. Most people, most companies, even companies that have, you know, household brand names, you could get a 40% lift just by making sure that reps actually return emails and stuff like that. So so what we're focusing on is hygiene first, technology second, automation third.
Okay, so let's talk about that. And are you starting with the business developer or SDR, BR, ADR role, or are you focusing on the account executive once you have a qualified op? Where are you focusing your efforts in terms, if I were to look positionally in the pipeline, where are you sitting?
So we are playing the role of the SDR or PDR or BDR. We are developing opportunities and booking appointments for our customers, for their AEs or for their founders, if they're smaller customers.
Okay,
so we're playing that role.
So let's walk. Are you able, or would you share walking through some workflow? Well, here's where I'm really interested in this, because one of the biggest issues for us is always the list. It's the quality of the list. It's, do we have the right people on the list? Do we have the right companies on the list? So walk me through how this would look if we were to implement something like this, where the SDR role is the automated tool. So where does it start?
Yeah, it starts with the customer's best guess about what their ideal customer profile would be. What's their ICP, okay, as we call it,
and it's left over from predictable revenue.
Exactly. That's a nod to the book. I love the term because it's super descriptive and people respond to it.
Yeah.
And then with that ICP, generally people answer that question with what they would like it to be, which is not what it is. So where we start is, let's actually look at the product history, deals you close, and we look at two things. We look at the rate, the number of customers that became referenceable, and then the sales cycle. Those are the two most important things for me in determining when we're looking at past results. Mm-hmm. So we want the shortest sales cycle and the people who became referenceable the easiest, that required the least effort to have the most success. I guess one way of thinking about it is, we're optimizing for the most value that was actually conveyed to their customers. And we identify that as the ICP. And then there is an overlay where, okay, that's the present state. Maybe there's a strategic element where we're wanting to move up market, or we're wanting to expand geographies, or there's some other strategic layer which can't be seen in the just simply by analyzing the past. Because the past does not always reflect the future. So we kind of juggle those two, and it's a mix of math and plain old sales insight, consulting. And then once we have arrived at what we believe is the ICP, we start running little tests to find the right entry point on those accounts. So we might have four or five guesses about who we should be contacting. And so we'll take a small number of accounts and split test. Is it better to go into the CEO and refer down to the buyer? Is it better to get to straight to the end user and get referred up to the buyer? Is it a play through finance? And it really depends, of course, on the product and or the service. Sure. and what's going on there. But we split test the entry point from there. Mm-hmm. And then once we have a good idea of who's responding, then we assemble the contact data, the lookalike account data, the what I call the personalization data, which would be all of the data that's going to be used to have that additional personal touch. Like, for example, hey, I noticed that my CEO used to work for LinkedIn, and your CEO used to work at LinkedIn during the same period of time. That's the kind of paragraph which you can automate once you have that reference data, what I call the personalization data. I noticed you have an interest in XYZ sports team. Congrats, you just won the Warriors just won the championship here in Oakland. So that's if you reference that, you're more likely to get an open. Mm-hmm. So once you have the ICP and then you've collected the account data and then you've collected some personalization data on those accounts, then you build you build messaging, and it's just test and repeat. We always do a six-way multivariate test every week. So there's two different messaging strategies across three different alias strategies. You know, we see which of those six is popping out that week, and then continually adjust week by week. You know, if you have a pool of accounts, let's say 1,000 or 2,000 accounts, we would expect to be getting at least 20 opportunities willing to have a meeting on the phone every week. Every month. Five every week, 20 a month.
20 a month.
And that puts us in the top quartile of SDR performance in the country, based on the research I've done. The average is around 8 a month. We feel that, you know, therefore, if you're paying less than a full-time SDR for our service, then we're overperforming. But that's the process at a high level. I've left out some of the secret sauce, but you get the basic idea.
Yeah, so first thing that came to my mind is this a replacement for outsourcing? A lot of firms, because they don't want to necessarily make the FTE of getting someone in-house to train, to do all of the ramp for this role, they outsource thinking that that's going to give them some relief. And
yeah,
you're aligning, you're saying, we won't talk pricing, but you're saying similar to an FTE. And outsourcers are going to be a multiple of that. So is that part of your sort of thinking, that those folks who do outsource some of the SDR role, thinking that they're going to offload that workflow because they can hire people who have the habit of follow-up? Is this this is sounding like a nice replacement for that.
Yeah, I think outsourced companies have the right promise, but the wrong track record
for
delivery. Mm-hmm. I love that promise. And I think, you know, we've gone fairly deep in some partnership with some of those outsourced companies. I've actually consulted with some of the industry-leading outsourced companies, visited their floors, you know, trained their people. And those outsourcing companies tend to work for about 5% of their customers. So for every 100 customers, they can actually deliver what they promised 20 times, which is why they have the reputation they have, right? And it's just the product was in the right time, or the messaging, you know, was okay. But they don't tend to have that ongoing sort of consultative intelligence to figure out if something's not on track, why is that, and how to correct it.
Correct.
And so, you know, when we first started the company, Travis and I imagined that we would be creating a sales consulting company.
Mm-hmm.
And then we quickly realized that if we build technology to actually do the work, then we can spread our consulting wisdom across many, many, many more accounts right when it's needed, you know, so that instead of taking a full day workshop to figure out the answer to a question, we can look at a screen which has all the data, see exactly where the problem is, make the correction, have the implementation automated, so that we can manage, you know, a single consultant can manage 50 accounts instead of, you know, so they're basically outperforming on average 50 full-time SDRs, one person, just with what we have now. My goal is to make that number by the end of the year, 500, and then in 5 years, 5,000. And then it's a combination of human intelligence, organic intelligence, and AI. It's a partnership between the two. You can't run it completely on its own, but at that ratio, it's close enough, you know, for business.
So, I'm thinking of top of funnel, and I'm coming from a telephony background. So a lot of times when we're missing our mark with conversion rates for the email engine, we supplement with the phone. And what we do with the phone primarily is we map into the organization looking for those highly influential contacts who can help us get into our targeted prospect, you know, whoever that persona is, that person that we really want to have some type of conversation with as an SDR before we hand it off to the account executive, or before we set up, if you're selling more complex sales, you know, the stakeholder meeting. How does this integrate with the use of the phone? Does it replace it in your mind? Where what are you thinking there?
Yeah, so it's a great question. What we've noticed is that if you separate accounts into sort of the early adopters, the early majority, and everybody else, mm-hmm. Phone works really well for the everybody else category. People at the early adopter accounts don't tend to answer their phone, even the influencers. It's much easier for me to get a response through a LinkedIn message or a social message or by tagging them on Twitter or Instagram. You know, it's much easier for me to get their attention through a different channel than by trying to call them. I think a possible exception to this would be an SMS message, you know, reaching them on their phone, but through a text message.
Through text, right.
Yeah, exactly. So it's actually the market that's driving, to me, the move away from the telephone. Not the providers, not us. There are some accounts that we're running now that are targeting that late group. You know, their customers are not the early adopters. It's not disruptive technology that they're selling. It's it's lead pipes and nails and things like that. So we actually have exclusive calling, contracts for them, and it's basically the same thing, except for instead of split testing messaging for an email, we're split testing call scripts. All the calls are recorded and, you know, transcribed. So we have the same technology working that way. But that's a minority, really a minority. And it's only if you know that your customers are not, you know, are more on the technophobic, slower to adopt spectrum. I think that in the next 2 years, we're going to see a massive move away from business done on the telephone. And I think companies that have relied on that for an extra level of trust, the ones that are going to win, are going to institute highly targeted web available, like mobile web available resources that give business insights to the customer. Mm-hmm. For example, instead of a telephone where you call, where you call the CMO and say, "Hey, Fred, I know we play golf, but can you have your guy look at this thing?" I think we'll send a text message to Fred that says, "We've identified a gap in your number one metric that you could close this quarter. Click here to see how." You click it and you see graphs which are relative to that company's specific performance and their place in the marketplace, all of which could be automatically generated. Now they've got a actual meaningful business insight in their hand with a one click. Okay, let me pass this on to the right decision maker. Now you're going to get a response to that email.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's going to move in that direction, but I think who's driving that is the customer and their desire to business that way.
Right. And is this method of communication focused primarily on in Silicon Valley, West Coast? Because I live in Iowa. And I cannot tell you how many coffee invitations I still get to this day for a face-to-face, get-to-know-you type of meeting. So are there pockets that are going to be resistant that you see? Or is this a way we can sort of offload the mundane, you know, habitual type of follow-up and supplement rather than replace the preferred method of contact, which in some cases is still face-to-face?
You know, I think that technology will never replace relationship. Mm-hmm. I think that we're actually in business for the relationships. And it's actually the most rewarding aspect isn't the financial win. It's helping someone and feeling that you've done that. I do think, though, that most of the ways we connect now are overly mundane tasks, and the more those are automated, the more it will leave room for the, I think you'll still, in other words, have that coffee invitation, but yeah. I hope that the content of what you talk about together is deeper, is more insightful, is more meaningful to you, because you don't have to talk about the, just let me get your business, or let me show you what you can do, or let me run through the features, because all of that's handled in a very automated fashion. So mm-hmm. then we can just talk to, like, hey, I'm just curious, you know, what scared you? Or what has you the most excited right now? And these kinds of questions can lead to strategic insights in business that I just don't think are possible using, you know, other techniques. So it allows us for higher, I think it allows us to have higher quality human connection. And I don't think we'll ever have less of that, because that's the reason we're in it in the first place.
Right. I love the idea. I love the concept of meaningful. And also I love the concept of automating those types of tasks that are repetitive in nature, that are not, that are helpful in getting you to the desired goal of that in-person, you know, belly to belly, we used to call it in the old days, yeah. But you know, that ability, and we're craving that. We have a lot of technology available for us, but you know, I had a class recently I taught where I did a survey at the end of the class. I said, what would you like me to improve? And almost everybody said, we want to see more of you, your face instead of yeah. the screencast. And I thought, that is interesting, you know, that yeah. it wasn't the material, it's that connection. So, you know, this artificial intelligence or augmented intelligence, I like that term actually better, because people are afraid of AI, so to speak, that the machines yeah. are going to run yeah. the world. So I love the way you've softened that with your term. But I think if we can take those repetitive tasks that we all have to do and resulting in a richness of our database and our ability to have those meaningful conversations, that sounds like a win-win to me.
I think the first role that we'll switch will be the SDR, and our metric when we create an opportunity is still either a phone or a face-to-face meeting, mm-hmm. for exactly the reason you mentioned. But I think that meeting is going to get moved later and later in the sales cycle over time. I can imagine a future where sales reps only ever talk to customers who have already purchased. Mm. So the first call is, hey, I just committed, I'm in. Now, can you be my strategic partner in figuring out how to get the most out of the product that we just bought? What you know, can you help me plan out? So they become almost the customer success department. Has a larger and larger headcount, and the sales department now supports that function instead of trying to quote unquote win business for most accounts. Right. You know, all but the high touch. Yeah, we're a decade or more away from that reality, but I could see that coming.
So let me ask you, you know, where the SDR role is starting conversations with people we don't know, but they're typically targeted accounts. So we have to remember and worry about five levels of awareness. The bottom layer is that they're still unaware. They don't know what to search for. They don't know if they have a problem. It still exists in this day and age. Until you become aware of something, you really don't know how to properly. My kids are always telling me, Mom, you don't know how to search properly. I'm like, what does that mean? But anyway, I get that a lot. So, you know, there is this level of awareness. How is marketing perceiving what you're doing with your company now? Are they excited about the fact that you're going to help them bubble up awareness or what?
Well, I have to say I'm biased by the customers we have, which means they're the people, they're the companies that agreed to work with us. So in our customers, marketing is really excited because mm-hmm. I think the marketing role is often torn between direct response results, like being measured on a per lead basis.
Yeah, demand gen.
And also, mm-hmm. like demand gen on one hand, and then brand on mm-hmm. the other. And those two masters often can feel to the marketer like competing with each other.
Yes.
The choice that is positive for demand gen is a negative brand choice and vice versa. Mm-hmm. So You know, they get a little nervous when they hear that we're going to be sending messages out, but we give them a chance to approve everything. And then once they've seen a couple of messages and they see how human they are, ironically speaking, they get real comfortable after seeing a few, and then they get excited. And then once they're out of the fear that there's, their dear customer is going to get some robotic message that they're going to hate, once they realize that's not happening, then they absolutely love what they're doing because it allows them to focus more on supporting with brand messages the key call to action that we've tested out. So, mm-hmm. If we're focusing on a particular pain point, and that's the one that's really working, then that feeds back to marketing. They go, okay, well, we can actually produce some marketing which ties that pain point to a larger benefit, so that we get the customer thinking about a long-term journey instead of just a transaction. And so it's actually been inspiring for the marketing counterparts for that reason.
Plus, coming from a process point of view and loving the tracking and metrics, because the conversation is automated, that means the tracking of the conversation points that resonated to shorten the lag in the pipeline, there's a natural feedback loop back to marketing so that they, like Lego blocks, can know which pain point is resonating, at what point in the pipeline does it seem to resonate faster, and let's front end our marketing speak or our conversations with the challenges of this particular pain point so that people bubble up faster. I mean, this sounds great, because a lot of times what I'm fighting for is to get SDRs to comply to just wrapping up a call or wrapping up what happened in the conversation or what they clicked on. We have that information from email, but sometimes it gets lost when the SDRs are sending out personalized emails. We don't necessarily know what template they used, what the pain point that resonated in that template was, so that feedback can go to marketing so they can organize the cadence, the dance, the rhythm of that conversation.
Yeah. And that's exactly right. I think in the coming months, you're going to see Outbound Works more as a platform or a product and less as a service. Mm-hmm. And what you'll see is that dashboard with all of that information, mm-hmm. for the sales leader, for the CEO, for marketing, even for the board, with customizable views where they just have all the information they want at their fingertips that allow them to make higher quality decisions. To me, if a product doesn't allow you to make higher quality decisions, it's not doing its job. So that's what we're focused on.
I want to be respectful of our audience. We've gone over my usual time allotment. So, Brian, let's end the call here. We can go forever, but let's end the call here. And why don't you share with us how we can get a hold of you, how we can start consuming some of this wonderful information, and determine if this is something that we want to supplement for our business models as we move forward into 2018 and beyond.
Absolutely. So the best way is to go to outboundworks.com. No funny spellings. It's all one word. No dashes or anything else. Just outboundworks.com. Go there. You'll be able to contact us using the contact form. At which point we will track your every move from that point forward and make sure.
Indeed.
Exactly. And then we'd love to have a conversation with you. We're growing fast, but we're still at the size that I'm happy to do strategy calls with customers, who have a particular challenge around implementing something. I just had a call this morning, in fact, where I recommended that he's not ready for our service, but I solved his problem on the call, so we can all be doing this right. So wherever you're at, go ahead and just reach out, and I'm happy to talk to you, or you can talk to one of my co-founders.
And I'll be sure to put all your information in the show notes for everyone if they're driving right now saying, I can't write that down, or I won't remember that. So I'll make sure that's there. Do you want to leave us with an ideal client profile that you think right now, where you're set up right now today with your company, that would be a good fit for you?
Yeah, there's two that we're absolutely knocking out of the park. One is you have your B2B, your lifetime value for your product is above $10,000, and you have, fairly strong inbound, and you're just thinking about creating an outbound organization. So you're thinking about hiring SDRs and more AEs. We'd love to talk to you and really save you a lot of time and headache and money in that process. The second is maybe you've got recently acquired by a larger organization and you have a centralized sales team that you're trying to get their attention for your little product, your product number 1793 on their price list, but you have an earnout, you know, where you've got to make sure that your product is selling. We love helping you just become the favorite son of the centralized sales team by handing warm introductions to them using your budget instead of having distraction from centralized sales. So Wonderful. Those two, yeah, we're doing really well with those guys.
Okay, and that also includes for those of you who I've seen a lot lately is that, again, the stronger inbound typically means, not always, the smaller accounts, so SMB, Yep. And you're trying to move mid-market, enterprise level, which means that you need to sort of pull it all together and get a little bit better with your sales conversations because the sales cycle has now been a little bit extended. So if you're thinking of moving into those different tiers, it sounds like Brian would be a perfect person to run some of your thoughts through and see if he can help you there. Because it's strong inbound can mean that you're strong inbound on the lower end and you're trying to move into mid-market or up from there, which there's a ton of companies that I've talked to just in the last 6 months who are trying to figure that out.
Yeah, it can also mean an inappropriate confidence in your sales process.
I love that.
So, exactly. Maybe Mary Lou could help you as well with some of that.
Well, very good. Brian, thank you so much. This is a very intriguing topic. I'm sure we'll be hearing a lot more about it. And I really appreciate you taking the time to share your expertise with us today. Thank you.
It was my pleasure. I absolutely loved it. So thank you.